Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 127. And welcome to the Church of Serendipity. All hail the great Lord Whoops, the great Neglector. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you guys?
You didn't sing the psalm.
I know. Because the psalm was from, the hymn was from another church. Not the
That's true.
Church of Serendipity. I don't remember which one it was, but...
Whoops be blessed.
Whoops be blessed. Is that going to be our mantra now?
It's a shame we didn't discover this earlier.
I don't remember where we were.
You don't remember where we were?
Nope.
You said something.
Pin this all on me.
Huh? I got distracted by this Facebook comment of, so apparently there's a large number of people who want David Tennant to return as the next Doctor. Just ... no.
On behalf of all of us here at Traveling the Vortex, well, I'd like to tell these people, get over it.
You were saying something about the... they stole it from us.
Oh, the Serendipity. Yeah.
We're still on the Church of Serendipity.
I'm
didn't get very far.
You said that we should. It's a pity we didn't discover that during our serendipitous phase. And I said I'm fully convinced that despite how long ago it was written, they stole that from us. That they heard us on the air and said, Serendipity, we like that. We should do something with that. And the guy wrote it into the script.
I think that came out like 2003, but okay.
It was probably written in 2003, but
that's what I'm saying.
How was your guys' weekend? Sean, what'd you do?
Thank you. It just stuffed my mouth.
If you hear us munching, we're eating comfort food. I provided for the gang because, well, the news.
What news? There's no news.
Not comfort food for me. I don't give a care.
I worked. I was offered a keyholder position at work.
Did you accept the keyholder position?
I told him I wanted to think about it, and I hadn't really gotten back to him when he came to me on Saturday, and he said, there's nobody else to do it here.
He said, so you were offered a keyholder, and then you were given a keyholder.
Yeah, pretty much. He said, I'm not working another open to close. And I said, dude, if I'd have known you were doing open to closes, I'd have gone ahead and just done it. He says, well, I know you don't want the responsibility. I said, it's not so much that I don't want or I'm afraid of the responsibility. It's a matter of after you've done it for 20 years, it's kind of like, I'm going to go over here and shelve videos. You'll deal with those angry birds. But I did it, and the store didn't burn down, so that was all.
Well, that's good.
All fine and dandy. I was excited. Maybe this should go in the news or anything, but this is something that I personally was very excited about, and I didn't know if you guys had heard this being in the news. Did you hear about Cameron? About Jim Cameron?
Jim Cameron? Are you on a
Jim basis now? Filmmaker.
They go to the gym a lot.
James Cameron. Ever since Titanic, when he made multiple dives down to the wreck of the Titanic, he's been... fascinated by and really kind of obsessed with undersea exploration. And he got to the point where he made a movie called Aliens of the Abyss, which was all about the different sea life and things under the sea. And he built a sub to be able to do it, because one of his big complaints is anytime you go down and you're in the water, you know, they've got these big, gigantic steel cans that you go in, and the windows are this big, and you can't see anything. He used to be a graphic designer for Roger Corman before he started making movies as a director. So he's very, very mechanically, you know, artistic drawing and all that kind of stuff. And he built the submarine that basically is a gigantic transparent glass bubble so that he has a complete field of view around him, and did all these dives solo.
Is it made of transparent aluminum?
I don't know what it's made out of. But his newest obsession, and this happened...
It's a Star Trek reference.
Yeah. this happened Monday.
For Chrissy's benefit.
He has built a new sub called the Deep Sea Challenger, and he is the first human being to reach the 6.8-mile deep Mariner's Trench. He went to the deepest spot of the ocean on his own in a sub that he built.
That seems rather dangerous.
Yeah. No, no. Yeah.
How do we get Avatar 2 and 3 if he died down there?
It would be terrible.
Give it to Joe Johnson.
Oh. Joe Johnson could do better.
Better than Cameron?
No, no. Could do better movies than Avatar 2 and 3. Oh. He has better things to do, is what I meant.
I'm just.
That's impressive.
It yeah, really is. I'm just flabbergasted.
I'm not trying to belittle his achievement. That's really impressive.
And so he did it. I mean, that's way cool. So, I mean, it's 38,000 feet. That's a dive and a half. And especially when I read the article when he talked about going down the Titanic, and he thought it was really eerie because at the time that he initially went down, there were fewer people that had visited the wreck of the Titanic than had walked on the moon. That's kind of an indicator of how rare this particular environmental element is for exploration, and just the fact that he's pushing the boundary that far, that hard. That, you know, my hat's off to the guy because I'm impressed with him as a filmmaker, but now I'm even more impressed with him as an individual because that's just cool. Huh. I'm done.
There's your random bit of trivia for this week.
My random bit of trivia for this week. So, go Jim.
Didn't do anything else, just worked?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. We watched Superman 4, but I won't get into that. I did complete for anybody who's still wondering, yes, I did record the Star Trek movies side trip, but I got a little long-winded, so I'm going to do some editing before I turn it over. It wasn't horrible.
I got a voicemail the other day. Asking me how I edited the podcast, if I did it in GarageBand or if I actually pulled it over to Audacity, because he got a little long-winded and he needs to edit.
It's not horrible. It's just I realized I talked about the entire Star Trek original series in about 30 minutes, and I talked about 8 movies in 47.
Why'd you do 8?
Well, because I knew I was running long, so I did the original 6 and then didn't do any of the next-gen movies because there's no frame of reference for the next-gen movies for anybody who's been doing it this way.
You did.
And skipped ahead to the...
Oh, I got you. That's where I was confused. Yeah, there's only 6 too. Original films, but you lumped in the next
two. I lumped in the next two, the new ones. So. Okay. But like I said, I need to trim it just a little bit because I kind of realized I was geeking out a little too hardcore about Wrath of Khan and needed to not do that, so I'll go back and trim some of that, but look for it on the posts maybe this week.
Well, you are working a lot now, so...
I am working a lot now.
How many hours you get in the week now?
I don't know, 5 days worth.
He's a key holder, so...
5 days worth? Are you working full 8 hours?
No, not all of them.
Okay.
Like tomorrow I'm working 4 to 9-ish, so...
Time to be close.
9. And then
you never have to work very late. That's nice.
Yeah, well, Fridays and Saturdays is 10. Oh. But then, you know, by the time we get done, it's usually 11 by the time I get out. But that's not bad.
Yeah, but in the movie business, sometimes it'd be like midnight before you close. And yeah. Then, yeah, so that's not too bad.
Anything compared to the movie business is paradise. So.
All right.
What'd you do?
I went and played disc golf with Keith yesterday. Finally got to play Big Shunga. And I've decided it's a pretty cool course once you figure out where everything's at.
It helps to have a map.
Yeah.
Keith fortunately brought a map along, so we didn't have a too difficult of a time.
Once we found the start, we were good to go.
Yeah. We did spend... There were probably a couple holes we spent probably a good 5 minutes trying to find the flags, but...
Yeah.
And at least luckily there was a guy there that was playing behind us that knew where one of them was. So.
The T-box flags or the pin flags?
T-box flags. Yeah, there were a couple where we were like, we think
the pins
let's go that way.
Pretty easy. And then we did do that a couple of times where we said, I think that pin's on the other side of that hill. We'll go that direction. Unfortunately,
this is what the map says. We're going to go with the map.
Well, they keep mowing over the flags. So. Yeah,
well, there were some where they didn't. And so there's big mounds of grass around the flag.
But it's a good course. It's
I love it.
I think it's
so pretty.
I like it because it wasn't busy, for one thing. There was hardly anybody back there. And it's off the path, so there's not a lot of street, with the exception of 13 and then 14 coming back. You're close to the street, but that's it.
Yeah.
And but I think it's big. I think it's a lot bigger than
it is.
You've got to
bomb some of them out.
What's Phil say about it? What's his
8,000 feet? That's his mantra.
Apparently, that's how long they are.
Oh, entire is that thing right?
I have no idea.
According to the map, the longest hole is 800 feet.
Oh, wow.
Which is long on any
course. That was hole two.
Hole two. Well, we said the two felt like the longest, and then I think 13 was the one that we
second said. Shortest is, or second longest is 13 at 777.
That's what we decided, that 13 was probably the next longest.
So. And then 12 at 684.
Yeah, when you read off numbers like that, I don't feel bad getting fives and sixes.
Oh, man.
Even though
I may set the par for five on that.
The experts will claim, oh, it's a par three. It's like, no, it isn't.
Well,
we watched a guy in front, well, behind us, and then we let go in front of us who, he was probably parred each one of those. Although he sailed that one down 13, all the way down, got it really close, and then his putt in was horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Missed both of his putts. So I was like, oh, my God. He was only like 15 feet from the hole, maybe 10 feet. Anyway, so that was a lot of fun. So yeah. We did that, and then I did a lot of yard work this weekend. Grilled some steaks out tonight. That was pretty much the extent of it. Caitlin's catching up on Doctor Who. She just watched Impossible Planet, Satan Pit. So she's a little more than halfway through Series 2. And Holly and I watched Power of Three last night. So she is almost halfway through Series 7. So they're getting there. And that was about the extent of what I did.
I introduced Sarah to two. Were you going to ask a question?
I was going to make an addendum to my my gushing on Jim Cameron. He's apparently the first human to reach the valley solo. There was a two-man team that did it back in the 60s in a bigger sub, which included retired U.S. Navy Captain Don Walsh and... Jacques Picard, who is who Jean-Luc is named after.
Oh.
I don't want to just, you know, he's dead now, but I didn't want to.
Yeah.
He's dead now.
Not from the dive, but I didn't want any of our eagle-eyed listeners out there to be going, hey, wait a minute, you forgot so-and-so, you claim to be a fan. So I thought I'd correct that. Anyway, so a grilled steak, and they're watching Doctor Who.
That was it.
Is Caitlin still digging it?
She is, yeah. She's real excited. She got most of the way through Impossible Planet. She said, hey, I don't really get this one. So I went down and watched Satan Pit with her. Although, once she saw Satan's Pit, she...
Then it made more sense.
It made a lot more sense to her, so...
It's a two-parter, so...
Yeah.
I introduced Sarah to a couple new movies, or a couple movies this weekend. Last night, we watched Heart and Souls. I'm glad you shared my enthusiasm for it, Sean.
I love that movie.
Glenn isn't that impressed.
It was a fine one-timer. Beyond that, I'm not a big fan.
Glenn likes Superman 3.
Sarah wasn't that impressed with it. She thought it was cute. She thought Robert Downey Jr. did a great job in it, which he does. But yeah, and that's one that I recently discovered was on Netflix. And I was like, ever since I found out, I was like, you've got to watch this. You've got to watch this. It's Robert Downey Jr. You've got to watch this. So I might have hyped it a little too much. And then I told my mom that it was on there, and then my mom hyped it because it was one of those movies we watched growing up just over and over and over, and so we probably hyped it a little too much.
We watched that one a lot when it came out at Suncoast. That was one of our regular rotation ones.
It's such an enjoyable movie.
And every single time somebody would come into the store and go, what is this movie? It's like, ah, you need to buy a copy of this.
I'd forgotten a lot of it. I remember the big bits of him singing, of Alfie Woodard's character taking over and, don't tell me to get loud, we'll get loud. And then the Kira Sedgwick taking over part. And those were the three main parts of the movie that are, and the dancing in the street.
Walk Like a Man.
Yeah, Walk Like a Man, dancing in the street part. Those were the main parts I remembered. So there was, it was almost like rewatching it. Or it was almost like me seeing it for the first time again, which was rather nice. And it's a bit darker than I remember.
It can be, yeah.
And then today, finally watched The Princess Bride.
Yay! Not you, but Sarah.
Well, I watched with her, yeah.
Well, but you've seen
it. I've seen it, yes. And she really enjoyed it. She liked it a lot.
How could she not like it? It's nearly a perfect film.
She was... She really got a kick out of the Boo Woman. And she really liked Inigo Montoya. And Andre the Giants. And yeah, she really didn't have anything. She didn't have anything bad to say about it. Which, how could you? And now, afterwards, she was kind of like, "Now I kind of get what everyone was talking about, and now I get all the references that everyone's made all the time that I went over my head." And in fact, today, after we watched it, we went to shows, and Julian made a reference, and I don't think he even did it on purpose.
I don't think that means what you think it means.
Yeah. And I forgot how enjoyable that movie is. I've always liked it, but it's always one of those that I don't rewatch a lot. So it's... Which, in fact, I didn't own it. Sarah brought that one in. She owned it, and she never watched it. And I never owned it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's surprising.
So I'd always go pick it up at the library if I wanted to watch it, or I just never bought it.
Is it not on Netflix right now?
I don't know. We watched the DVD, and I didn't look
it. It was for a while, but...
It probably is.
It may not be now.
I just knew we had the DVD, so I went and popped it in. But other than disc golf, that's what we did.
Very cool.
Very soon on the list for her to watch is Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
I still haven't watched it.
You guys might appreciate this. Mel kind of laughed at me.
It's on my computer.
It's, you know, well, it's within her purview to laugh at me. We got in a copy of The Sandlot on Blu-ray at work.
Ooh.
It's 20th anniversary edition. And, of course, it's kind of like, ooh, The Sandlot.
Been that long?
Oh. Yeah, no lie. 1993. What's the same age as Jurassic Park?
And Heart and Souls.
And Heart and Souls, actually, for that matter. No, was it a 93?
It was 93, I believe.
Oh, that was a 94. Anyway.
Hold on, I'll IMDb.
So, it was a used copy, so we, you know, cracked it open and I was checking
it
out.
No, it was 93.
You know what was inside this thing in the 20th anniversary pack of The Sandlot? Baseball cards of the kids.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was like, this suddenly went up to must purchase. And I told Mel that, and she just laughed at me. I'm like, what? And she just said, I love you. But what? You wouldn't want to have a baseball card of the great Hambino? Apparently didn't hold the same allure for her.
That's one I haven't seen in a really long time.
Tequila.
You know they made a sequel?
They've made
Kill Me, Babe.
Three.
Did they?
They made two.
I remember they made one recently.
Yeah, that's the third one, I think.
Is it? Wow.
I haven't bothered with them. I couldn't tell you.
I haven't either.
Shall we move on to news?
Yep, let's move on to news.
Gallifrey 1, the big convention, has added more guests. And since we can't remember if we mentioned this back in April, we're going to mention it now. Bonnie Langford. Will be at Galley. What?
Who played Mel?
Yes, who played Mel.
Not Sean's Mel.
Not Sean's Mel. And she's aged really well. Have you seen this picture of her? Yeah.
She's the one on the left.
Yeah.
She looks...
Well, the other gal's lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, she has. The other gal being...
Sorry.
Annette Badland, who played Margaret Blaine, the Slitheen warrior in Aliens of London, World War III, and Boomtown.
Who I'm excited about. I don't know if anybody else is, but
she's a good actress. And then on June 1st, they announced a litany of guests.
Start at the bottom and work up.
Start at the bottom and work up. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm going to butcher her name.
Yeah, I don't know that one either.
Veli Tasha Balala. That's what I'm going to go with. Rosita from The Next Doctor is going to be there. Stuart Milligan, who played Nixon, is going to be there. Lachelle Carl, the news anchor, Trinity Wells from Doctor Who, Torchwood, and Sarah Jane.
I'm glad you just went with the series and didn't try to nail down the individual episodes.
Oh, I'm going with what they have and made the news.
She's been in
She's like always the...
She's the American...
AMNN news anchor.
Yes.
Which, that would actually be kind of an interesting... somebody should look up and find out episode count. Because she may actually be in more episodes than Eccleston.
The highest guest.
Just out of curiosity. Somebody should look that up. I'm not going to do it, but...
Nabil Shaban, who played Syl in Vengeance on Barrows. Which, by the way, if you didn't
not
see...
Not just Vengeance.
Well, we haven't got to the other one yet.
Oh, okay.
He's Mind Warp.
Okay.
He's familiar with him from Vengeance.
I got you.
Which Vengeance is going to be the Sixth Doctor Revisited special.
Called it.
Also,
lean on that.
I think Keith crowded me out. I think I usually put my elbow here. That's why.
When you lean on it, that's our indicator that you're bored and we're talking too much.
Trying to wait till you get to the exciting guests.
How about this? Matthew Waterhouse. Not excited about
again,
Matthew Waterhouse?
Trying to wait till you got to the exciting... No,
who, of course, played Adric.
It'd be nice to meet Adric.
Has he done many conventions?
Not to my knowledge.
I got the impression
he's done
that
a handful, but
because
not many.
Of the vehement hatred most fans have for Adric, he stayed away from conventions.
Yep.
So this is kind of a rare get, I got the impression.
I think he would probably have a very interesting panel.
Oh, this is his third visit to Galley 1, the Gallifrey 1.
I was about to say, I think he'd been to Galley before.
Of course, it's been 25 years, so... 3 times in 25 years. Not bad. Also, Carol Ann Ford has been added.
Well, she was supposed to be there last year, and she had to bow out.
Yeah, so hopefully she can stick around this time.
Yeah.
And finally, Nicola Bryant.
That's not new news. I saw that added. So maybe I just saw a tweet the other
yeah,
day.
Yeah, it came out June 1st.
Okay.
We have not recorded
since
then.
I must have seen a tweet on it because that wasn't news to me.
But those are the new guests for Galley this year.
You know, I was kind of waiting for them to announce Nicola since Colin's going to be there. So.
Well, and so now all of his companions will be there.
All two of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's all he had.
Technically three.
Who's the third?
Frasier Hines is going to be there.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's technically three.
All we need is Shockeye and that woman to show up. We'll have a $2
dream.
No,
let's not.
I'd sit in on that panel. What was with the eyebrows?
That guy's dead, though.
Is he dead? Shockeye's
he
dead?
Was one of the ones that died a few years ago. I think so. I'm 100% sure on that. But
I don't know. With all these Six Doctor guests, I think they need to bring Michael Jaston back. I think.
Anybody?
Yeah. Let's do it. You know, he and I are on the same bathroom schedule.
Does he tweet as much as you do when...
No, I don't know. I just know that every time I went to the bathroom at Galley, he was in the bathroom. So, he probably thought I was stalking him.
All right.
And after watching what he consumed at the bar that night, I'm surprised.
Well, every time I was outside, he was out smoking cigarettes. So the guy smokes and drinks and does it all. So.
Just going back to the hotel room at 4 a.m. that last night, and him in the hallway going, "I don't know if I can do this when I get home. My wife's going to be upset with me." A couple of years ago, I could do this all night. Not anymore. Dude, it's 4 a.m.
All right. Well,
and that's the news for this week.
Let's move on to a bit of sad news that.
What's sad news? There's no sad news. That,
it's all lies and rumors. Want to, I will have to say that
lies, rumors, and speculation.
When the news came down, we were on the disc golf course, and it suddenly went from me being a friend playing golf. It was me being on suicide watch for Keith. So.
I have to say, I got some really good throws afterwards.
You did, yeah. Actually, your game improved after you found it.
Did you play angry?
Blake texted me and said, "Smith is leaving." That's all he said. And I turned to Glenn and I said, "I think Blake's trolling me." Because he's brought me supposed reports before of him sticking around or him not sticking around, and... Then he told me where he was getting his source, which was IO9, was where he was seeing it before BBC officially announced.
Needless to say.
Which, he's the one that posted it on our
I was Facebook. A throw behind Keith almost every step of the way, with the exception of a couple. And I actually went a positive on him. I did better than him on one hole, and that was 14. And you know why? It was right after he got the text, and he started doing some investigating and searching. And I don't think his mind wasn't
in the game.
Hole 14. So I took advantage of hole 14 and actually did better than him on that hole. But,
Yes.
Just to delay it one step longer. 14 was the one that I had this absolutely awesome... It would have been worthy of the Tron Legacy soundtrack throw on my tee off. And the disc hit this tree.
Oh, is that the one where it went?
And then it bounced around it. It was on hole 14 that happened.
Did you see my first disc up in a tree?
We didn't talk about you almost losing two discs.
Yeah.
Well, did you post these to Tumblr? I don't have a Tumblr account.
The only one I took a picture of was, it's on Facebook.
The other one we found pretty easy. Yeah, I almost lost one in Underbrush, too.
Keith found both of them, and then I found yours.
Yes.
I happened to see exactly where it went down. We couldn't see it on the ground.
Yeah, there's some dangerous brush around there.
It really is.
Keith, would you bring me my other tea, please?
Yep.
Thank you.
Anyway, I finally got one stuck in a tree. That was my first.
Woo!
Wasn't very high. Keith could reach it.
So. Oh, if Keith could reach it, it wasn't very high.
Well, I think he had to pull the...
Must have been a sapling. I'm making disparaging marks about your height. I'm sorry.
So
that's short.
I know.
I was gonna say, he's as tall as you, and he's taller than me.
I know.
I'm at least in between the two of
them. Yeah. I'm the short one.
All right.
By like an inch.
Let's talk about
it. Not much.
So the official news, and thank you to at Top City Batman, if you like to be, if you'd like to follow the guy who brings bad news to us. That's his Twitter handle. You can read this out or not?
You know, quite frankly, I'm not surprised.
Do we need to?
I'm not either.
Matt Smith is leaving after the Christmas special.
I think I've been saying this all along, that this was probably what would happen. And in fact, I didn't even quite believe when it was last week or 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the interview that Matt Smith allegedly said he was staying for season 8. Because as Keith kind of... when we were talking a little bit before the show, as he put it, if you look at it, if it could be taken out of context that he said he was staying for 8, if you put it in probably the context of what... Sorry, I keep stepping on your feet. Well, if you put it in context of what the... Would you quit my foot? Put it in context of what was probably asked of him that wasn't in the article, it probably was not him saying he was staying. So, and since the BBC hadn't made it had only made Stephen official... I wondered if maybe there was...
Clara, or Jenna Louise, has said she's sticking around, but BBC hasn't yet.
Right, right.
So that'll make Jenna Louise one of the rare...
but if you look at Jenna's interview, companions. She says she is coming back. I mean, she comes out and says it, whereas Matt's was a little cryptic.
Not as rare as you think, though.
Well.
Sarah Jane.
Yes.
Was the first, right?
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Two Doctor Companion.
Two Doctor Companion.
The companion who was there spanning a
year. Ben and Polly.
Oh, yeah. So
was the first.
That was the first one.
Yeah.
And then Sarah Jane.
No. Yes, Sarah Jane, yes. Because it would have been Zoe and Jamie two. Left the same time.
And then
I guess technically Adric, Tegan, and Nyssa.
All of them. And then Perry.
And then Perry. We don't know. Ace wasn't there.
Mel
carried over.
She carried over.
Oh, she did. Mel did.
She was in.
And then Rose.
Collins last, and Sylvester's first. And
then so Rose. There's been 11 other companions.
And then Rose.
Out of the entire list of what, 15? How many companions have there been?
He's had 30 some odd companions, hasn't he?
Oh,
it's been on
probably more than that.
Well,
okay, so they're still a minority.
And
yeah.
They're still in the minority.
I was thinking of that earlier, and I was like, no, there's more than I think there is.
Crossover companions.
Bridging.
Bridging companions, I like that.
And we were talking when we were on the course before we had ever read any of this, that we wondered if he would actually regenerate in the Christmas episode, but the BBC says somewhere in here that he will regenerate at the end of it.
At the end of the Christmas episode?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to have an end-of-time type situation. Likely.
Meaning we'll see him briefly and then...
And that's it.
That's it. So they'll have to catch somebody pretty soon because they'll start shooting that probably in a month or two.
Yeah, and said summer. I think they were... Or August stuck in my mind for some reason. So what do we think of this?
I'm okay with it. I'm sad, but
I'm actually faring better than everyone expects me to.
I'm shocked that you're upright. I really expected to get a text that Keith's balled up on the couch crying and that we can't record tonight. Then I saw the flood of posts from all of our listeners going, Keith, I need to have a marathon.
I'm sorry, Keith. I'm going to have to. You told me not to tell, but he did. He ran off into the woods and he was back there for like 20 minutes. And he must have been crying.
He tore off my shirt.
His eyes were all puffy.
You promised you wouldn't tell.
No, there hasn't been a tear yet.
I did reading his statement about being on the show and everything did kind of start to get me a little welled up. So it's mostly a abstract concept at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
It will become more real once we get it. The announcement of who the next person is going to be, and then when we watch the episode.
This
is going to be the worst Christmas ever. The most depressing Christmas I've ever seen.
He's going to get up in the morning and be like, you want to open gifts?
No.
Well,
I don't care.
Sarah said, we better do all the family stuff before we watch the episode.
We wondered how they could possibly talk the 50th, and we talked about how boring and bad the Christmas special will now be. Well, this might have actually popped it. You know,
it's a neat fix, for not regenerating in the 50th.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
Matt's been terrific, don't get me wrong. But, you know, we've had a good solid 3 years that I can tune back and watch at any time. And I'm ready for some new blood. Let's see where we go with it. I mean, we had Christopher Eccleston for a year. And I was a little bummed there, but I was okay with that. And David came along, and I thought he did a fantastic job. But when he said he was ready to leave, I was ready to move on and see who the next guy was. And I'm in the same boat now. You know, I'm just ready to move on and see who the next guy was. I mean, Sean and I have been dealing with regenerations for years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we know they move on.
That's part of watching the show.
The 3 year is pretty much the average. I mean, Tom kind of bucked the system there. But
well, and who was it? Was it Troutman that said 3 years?
Troutman told...
He told Pertwee.
No, he told Davison.
That's what it was.
They talked at a interview for the 50th. Or 50th. Yeah, no, not for the 50th.
Wow,
the
that 20th, would have been a neat trick.
For the 20th anniversary, they talked at an interview. Same. And he had just been a year into it, I think. And Troutman said, you know, just go do it for 3 years. Because, you know, anything beyond that, you kind of get stuck in the role. And anything less than that, you won't have as much fun. So that was what he said he'd do. And he did. Years later, he said that he would, if he looking back, he wished he had done another year because he did enjoy it so much. But he was glad he did what he did. So, and then, unfortunately, Colin didn't really even get a chance to get 3 years in. But.
I don't know. That was probably the biggest blow was just finding out about it. Because once again, I go through that whole range of emotions of, you know, as a Doctor Who fan. I didn't want to know this. I want to be able to turn back the clock to the point when I had no idea all this extraneous stuff about the show and just tune in and watch it and be aghast when he actually did die and he was put in peril and then regenerated and be like, oh, this is the last one with this guy. I mean, just and I will never, ever, ever be able to recapture that again.
Yeah,
at least not as long as I'm on this show. It's not going to happen.
Even before... the show, like on Facebook, just being a part, liking groups and being a part of pages in general, there's a lot of people that aren't on this show that still see all this same information just by going to Facebook.
I didn't know that.
Liking BBC on Facebook, we will give you that information.
Coming to it from being behind, even, I didn't know that Eccleston was regenerating after just one season. I was really shocked that was all.
Well, we were an entire year behind UK back then. Well, you were.
I was even further behind you at that point. That's something James said that he thought it was very fun, is that he said there's a whole... He's a little bitter. He says there's a James that I work with is an old school Whovian as well, and he joined us for Friday Night Who this week, but he made a comment to me at work the next day. He said there's a whole generation of Doctor Who fans now that just think they're all hip and cool because they're caught up. And he says, they will never know the pain that we went through being behind because you couldn't find it here.
Yeah,
and so, you know, this day and date business, he says, it just angers me because you will never know.
Well, there's a nice special feature on Revenge of the Cybermen, I believe, about trading VHS tapes and everything. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting to watch.
VHS, back in the day.
And the exorbitant costs you would pay just to get an end story.
Ship them, they would ship them across for people in the United States. And then they had to be lucky enough to find somebody that had a NTSC recording device because you couldn't, I mean, it was PAL to NTSC. So if you didn't have a VCR here that could play PAL, or they didn't have something that could record it that way, then, you know, there was...
It was like, and not even all that long ago, how much did Dave spend on a specialized player to get a copy of Spaced?
Right. Yeah. I mean, well, that's been 5, 6, 7 years ago.
So,
yeah, that's true.
Oh, the joys of technology.
I can't say that I was surprised, though, because we've had so many false alarms that this one would just seems like, yeah, it's... about time that it was actually real. So
I would just, I would like, whoever the next guy is, I would like for him to come out of the box and go, what's Tom's record? Yeah, I'm going for it. And everybody go, yeah! It won't happen, but just to see, you know.
Can I say I told you so now, though? Because I've been the one saying that he was going to leave at the Christmas episode. I mean, I've been saying it all along that just felt right. It made most sense to do the 50th and then leave at the Christmas special, if not before. So
have you said that?
I have said it many times.
Well, I suppose all
every about. Time that the false rumors have come out, I've said that pretty much sounds like that's what will happen, though.
I'll allow you, and I told you so. Not to me, but...
No, yeah.
You can tell him.
No.
I'm the one that said I think it's going to happen in the 50th.
Yeah, you did kind of say that. Yeah, I did say that a while back.
Just when we were discussing the 50th, that I thought... That seems like a good time to go out.
Does seem like
I think that's why I'm taking it so well as I've been expecting it.
Yeah. Man, you've got a whole extra episode. Woo! Now it's just on the structure of it. It's a brilliant plan because we get all the hype in the 50th without a regeneration, and then we go into the Christmas, which would have been a downer. And all of a sudden, we get that regeneration and get everybody back up and excited. And then you start another season with a whole new guy. It's a very... Maybe John Hurt. Maybe that's why there's no announcement. Everybody's going nuts over who's going to play the Doctor. Maybe they're actually going to give it to John Hurt. And it's already been cast and nobody knows it.
You know what would be cool? Bring back 8. Flashback it.
I'm totally down with it. We've said that before. Yeah. Give McGann a whole what if season.
Especially now that we've entered into the Doctor's whatever veiny timeline thing, we could just easily revisit any of that.
Just pull all of them back, and everybody gets the whole season.
No, I'm just saying that's the plot device where they could go back in and show us more 8. They've already given us the plot device for it. They don't have to invent something.
Oh, I see.
What?
Because we have seen his timeline and stuff, and they're currently in wherever they're at with John Hurt, that's how they can show us a season of 8th Doctor. Of
you don't need that vehicle anyway. You just go back and say this was the Doctor's run and go from
there.
You mean it just
you can do it
to
either
connect
way.
It?
So. Yeah. To less alienate the new viewers.
In air quotes. A giant laser.
In other words, those that will whine.
I'm sure some of our listeners...
The ones who want David Tennant back.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners want to chime in on this, so let's move on to feedback.
See, once again, you did this to me.
You should always be ready, Sean.
I should be, yes. Absolutely, I agree with you. I should be. But you know what the truth of the matter is? Not so much. This is the end. Hold your breath and count to 10.
Should we count to 11?
In this case, 11. Matt Smith has left again.
Did he leave before?
Or this is the end.
He's been saying a lot of times.
Oh.
Keith's drowned and dreamt this moment. So overdue, but unwanted. His regeneration. This is feedback with your letters. Panic attack. Face it all together. This is feedback. With your emails, panic attack, face it, oops, all together, back feedback.
Oh, it almost ended too soon.
I'm not used to that button being there, because normally I do that differently.
First up in feedback, Alex writes in, says, the Exploding TARDIS Conundrum and Other Tangential Mysteries. Hey guys, Alex here again. Still mainlining the show, and I'm almost up to date now. I've just started episode 124, and I'm currently listening to Keith detailing the recipe for his fried rice, which incidentally sounds like the food of the gods. It is. I've still not listened to all of your Series B reviews, so even though I do eventually want to weigh in with my opinions on those 8 episodes, I'm not going to do that just yet. I'm sure by the time I get round to sending my reviews and warning you in advance, that will be a long email. I'll be several weeks late, and everybody's memories of the series will already be slightly fuzzy. I apologize for my tardiness. I just want to make sure I've heard everything you guys have to say about the stories before I write up my own thoughts and opinions. I do, however, want to address some things that have come up in the episodes I've listened to between sending in my last feedback and now. For speed and convenience, I present these in a bullet point format. Bullet point number 1. On what at this point is the potentially taboo subject of bagpipes. Glenn, I understand your anguish. It's not that I dislike the sound they make, but it's something inherently ridiculous about them as an instrument. They fall into that category of things that aren't supposed to be funny, but inexplicably are. Like...
Cymru.
You forgot it was spelled that way, didn't you?
I did.
I could tell he was floundering.
Ooh, if that makes any sense. And before any objections are raised, let me say in my defense that I am, like the entire listener base of TTV, it seems, a quarter Irish. So I'm totally allowed to incessantly mock my heritage. That's how it works, right?
Hear, hear. Oh, wait, no. Because Glenn's wrong. Bad punch for us.
Bullet point number 2. A few words for Sean's 50th anniversary short stories. Fantastic, molto bene, and yowza. Aside from the very enjoyable style of writing, what I liked most about the 2 stories was how laden with continuity they were. It seems fitting for a series of stories celebrating the show's long and complex history to acknowledge some of the hazier areas of continuity, such as the mysterious Project 6B, or the fact that a certain hooded figure would have been present on Earth through the entirety of the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Presumably almost bumping into the Doctor and just missing him on multiple occasions within that time frame. Also, the idea of anybody forgetting the name of the Common Men's lead singer is hilarious.
You flatter me, sir. Thank you. The third Doctor story, unfortunately, has hit a bit of a snag, and we're in a time delay. We're in a temporal orbit.
Speaking of the 50th anniversary, mustn't talk about the name of the Doctor. Mustn't talk about the name of the Doctor. I'll just say that I'm taking Keith's approach of not believing anything until I see it on screen, though I'm fairly confident we'll be... That wasn't even a word.
I'm fairly confident.
I'm fairly confident.
Confident that we will be seeing the return of Tin and Rose pre-Doomsday as opposed to Handy. Either way, though, I'm just ecstatic to have Tennant returning. Though it would be nice to see more classic Doctors return to the show if... This is the lineup for this anniversary special we're getting, that I'll be more than happy with it. And now for the main thing I wanted to talk about in this feedback, because it's been discussed time and time again, and I felt that I needed to give my thoughts on the matter, the unresolved mystery of the exploding TARDIS from Series 5's finale. Sean theorized that Clara was going to be responsible for the explosion, which turned out to be incorrect, though it was the most accurate theory I heard on the resolution of the Clara mystery. It was closer than the Master's TARDIS, at any rate. And you've all talked about how you'd feel disappointed if the plot point never got resolved. Here's the thing, though. I think that plot point has already been resolved.
Disagree!
And the Pandorica opens. As River exits the TARDIS and the scanner screen cracks, we hear generic creepster voice saying, "Silence will fall." Though it seems like we never had any explanation for who Creepster is. I recall reading an interview with Moffat from 2011, which I tried to find online, but alas could not, that they had tried out several different voices for the silence before settling on the final sound. And that their initial voice had been higher and more recognizably human. So I think that the voice we hear in Pandorica is just a silence before the production team had made the final decision on what they wanted the silence to sound like.
I'm going to make a counterpoint there. I can totally buy that as an explanation, and that's fine, except for the fact that it's not on-screen continuity. It's something that we pulled up from an interview. So that's kind of like RTD saying, oh yeah, that one woman Time Lord is totally the Doctor's mother in the End of Time. Unless you tell me that within the continuity of the show, it's open to interpretation. I really don't care what you come up with outside of that because it doesn't work for me. So,
well,
it's a great idea. I don't know yet. I'm open to ideas.
Let him finish his thought because I think it's compound here because that doesn't answer the question.
I agree.
Okay.
Continue.
Moving onward, in the Big Bang, the Doctor says something drew the TARDIS to this particular date and blew it up. Why? And why now? The silence, whatever it is still out there. He ponders the explosion and then the silence in the same breath and without a beat in between. This implies that the Doctor already suspects that the silence were somehow involved with the explosion. He may not know who or what the silence are at this point, but he knows that they are the last missing piece in the puzzle and that they are therefore the most likely perpetrators. Does what we learn of the silence in Series 6 support this suspicion? Definitely.
That I'll agree with.
We learn in Series 6 that the aim of the silence is to kill the Doctor. We also learn that they have a very skewed perspective on the Time Lords. Because their knowledge of the Doctor, they assume that Time Lords are by default dangerous and intelligent and potentially deadly weapons when used for the wrong purposes. This is why they kidnap Melody. Because they think that the training a Time Lord assassin is the only way to take out another Time Lord. This is why they base their own ships on TARDISes, with the Doctor describing them as somebody's attempt to build a TARDIS. Whilst they obviously haven't quite figured out how to reconstruct a TARDIS, it's very likely they understand more about TARDISes and Time Lord technology in general than most of the Doctor's other adversaries, since the modus operandi in Series 6 is essentially use a Time Lord to kill a Time Lord. Taking all of this into consideration, their extensive knowledge of their workings of a TARDIS, their obsession with using aspects of the Time Lord mythos and their plans because they believe that Time Lords can be weaponized, and their memory wipe capabilities, who else in the entirety of the universe is better equipped to infiltrate and sabotage the Doctor's TARDIS? I suggest, therefore, that the exploding TARDIS in Series 5 is simply the silence's first attempt on the Doctor's life. They couldn't have predicted that River would be flying instead of him because, from their point of view, they hadn't kidnapped Melody yet. The explosion occurred before Melody was conceived, remember. So they had no idea who River was or that she could fly the TARDIS at that point. Much like the Alliance from the Pandorica, they guessed that the only person who could be flying the TARDIS would be the Doc himself, and so figured blowing up the ship mid-flight would be a pretty surefire way to kill him. Of course, since they haven't quite got the knack of building their own TARDISes yet, they probably wouldn't have been able to anticipate the consequences of the explosion, i.e. the cracks in time, which is most likely why they haven't attempted to blow up the TARDIS again since then. After all, they don't want the universe gone, just the Doctor. When I first watched Series 5, I thought all of this... Series 6. I thought all of this was clear enough that Explosion Mystery had been adequately resolved. However, a lot of people still seem confused over the matter. I'm starting to wonder if my theory is simply me trying to fill in all the blanks in the plot with the information available. So I present my theory to you for consideration, and would like to add that it's entirely possible that I'm completely wrong and the explosions was actually caused by Omega, a.k.a. John Hurt, a.k.a. the Master's TARDIS, a.k.a. Strax's evil twin brother, a.k.a. Eric Roberts. I suppose we'll find out eventually. Okay, you want to counter?
Strax's evil twin brother with a goatee. Yes!
Nope, Alex, I like your theory. That's what I'm going with.
I am not saying that you are wrong. Not at all. I'm saying you have put together a fantastic theory that does take into consideration all of the evidence that we have. And quite honestly, it's as good a theory as any of them at this point. Probably better in some cases.
And it makes the most sense, I think.
Unfortunately, if that was the intent and we are in fact done with it, I'm very, very disappointed in Moffat because
it wasn't conveyed well
in the episode, and I don't think one dropped line about, oh, they're trying to build a TARDIS is enough for me to be able to go, aha, that solves that problem. Yeah. I would very much like a, maybe I'm stupid. I freely admit that that's a possibility, but I would very much like an episode that just simply sits down and says, here, this is what we meant to do and didn't quite convey it. Make it a side story. Make it one of those little two-minute prequel things. I don't care. Just explain it to me and prove to me that this is why this happened. Because until I get that, I think the explosion is still open to interpretation, and I just can't wrap my brain around that it's that simple and yet unexplained.
If it were that simple, why didn't they explain it, in other words?
Well, I think it's very likely, like he said, that this is their first attempt to blow him up. But the Doctor says the TARDIS was drawn here. Why here? Why now? And we never really get an answer to that, other than it blows up. We never get the smoking gun. That's, I think, probably the biggest hole in this mystery for me, is if he finds a gigantic cannon on the planet that the Silence had set up and gone, aha... Okay, then that explains it. If we find out there was a Silence on board the TARDIS, who did sabotage it? Aha! All of that could have very easily been put in the episode, but it wasn't. So for me, it's still a bigger looming mystery. I just can't... I'm not satisfied with that. I hope that, maybe this isn't...
We've got two more episodes for him to address it. I don't think they're going to... I don't think they would continue it with a new actor in the role of the Doctor. I don't think they'd continue that storyline.
I would really
because they'd
doubt
be so
it.
Far removed. I mean, it's not even the same companions now, so it's still a bit too far removed, I think, to truly address it.
Yeah,
but we don't know what Moffat has planned. So
we're all gonna have these mind blown moments in the Christmas special when it turns out that the reason that Eleven regenerates is because he has to stop the TARDIS from exploding. All right, what else is there?
I like that. You're making that up.
Okay, I've talked for too long as usual. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about the finale. So I'm going to go and try and catch up on that up to that episode now. But rest assured, soon I'll be sending in entirely up to date feedback. By entirely up to date, I mean reviews of stories that you covered 2 months ago. I know, I'm a terrible person. Happy travelings, Alex. P.S. Extremely belated happy birthdays to Sean and Sarah, and additionally belated congratulations to everyone for landing that Daphne Ashbrook panel. It was great fun to listen to, and she seems like a lovely person to speak with. When that one guy asked who would win in a staring contest between the Angels and the Silence, all I could think of was, well, the Angels would be frozen if the Silence were staring at them, so they physically wouldn't... They wouldn't physically be able to blink. The Silence would have to lose. Keep up the great work, guys. PPS. Do you like The Wizard of Oz?
I thought you weren't going to read
it. I hadn't scrolled down all the way.
Thanks for rubbing that in, Alex.
Do you like The Wizard of Oz?
My friend Grace from work loaned me the first book.
Oh, nice.
Wonderful Wizard of Oz that Eric Schanhauer wrote. So.
Cool.
I haven't started it yet, but it's really cool.
Cool.
Moving on, up next is David.
David writes, "Oh, Doctor, my Doctor. An open letter to Matt Smith, I guess. Matt, thank you for everything. You were always willing to interact with fans, always ready to joke and have fun. You brought your own sense of who the Doctor is and played it perfectly. A personal anecdote. As a hobby, I started writing Doctor Who fan fiction, because who doesn't? As a person who back then was new to writing, I felt I had no idea what I was doing. But then I saw Matt on screen, and immediately words began to spray like a deadly but grammar-filled incesticide. I attribute my own style of writing to seeing Matt on screen and then trying to emulate it online on paper. Things kind of got out of hand as I was eventually brought back Davros for as a foe for no reason. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Matt Smith, you will go far, my friend. You're talented and such, so people will have noticed you. Goodbye, Matt, and thank you from the bottom of my heart. P.S. I wrote this drugged up on headache meds, so don't worry if it doesn't make sense. I'm sure I'm fine, or at least I hope I am. Oh, great. Now I think I'm not okay. God damn it, Matt!
You know one thing I forgot to mention that in our news segment on my reaction? You know who I blame for this also? It's all Ryan Gosling's fault. More reason not to like that guy.
Oh, because Matt's enjoying doing the movie with him so much.
Because he put the idea of Hollywood in Matt's head.
I mean, Matt's had the idea of Hollywood.
Yeah, well, he did.
This just happened
to be. But Ryan cast him in something. Do we need to look for reasons to not like Ryan Gosling? Come on, this is great evidence.
Who's next?
Up next is AJ.
All right, AJ writes, Matt Smith leaving? No! AJ Dome here. I really enjoy Matt Smith as the Doctor, but I'm confident that his replacement will carry on successfully. Hopefully Clara sticks around too, because I enjoy her and the Doctor. Her and the Doctor's bantering. Question. Do you like the Wizard? No, I'm sorry. Do you think they'll continue in the trend of casting actors with excellent hair to portray the Doctor? The only exception to the rule is number 9, Christopher Eccleston. Just curious of your thoughts on that. Hopefully you say not necessarily, because then I'll start working on my British accent immediately. Also, who would you like to see as the 12th Doctor? I say Martin Freeman for something completely different. Cheers.
Thank you, AJ. Hope you're wrestling squirrels in Colorado is going well.
He's wrestling squirrels in Colorado?
Or polar bears, I forget which. AJ is my former host on, one of my former hosts on Reverse the Polarity.
Oh.
He was one third of that trinity. So.
Do you guys have a pick for who you want for 12?
Somebody older.
John Hurt. I don't know. Somebody older. I agree.
I want somebody older. I mean, Matt did a fantastic job. And he really did encompass that whole old man in a young man's body. Yeah. But I'm ready.
Bruce Willis.
No. And I'm open to an ethnic minority, and I'm open to a woman. So bring it on. Let's see what we can do with it.
Carol Lombard. I don't know. I'm just throwing names out.
I'm not going to throw any names out because I have no expectations. I'm ready to see the next person.
I fully expected to say, who? When they announce who it is. I fully expect to say, who's this dude?
Somebody unknown.
Yeah, or relatively.
See, we talked a little bit about this before, too, but I really think it won't be an unknown this time. I think it will be a well-known. And I think the problem is because Matt has brought the game up to a certain level. And certainly Moffat has a lot to do with this, but he's brought more popularity to Doctor Who now than any other Doctor, even David Tennant. I think that now Doctor Who is at a level where it's never been in its entire span of 50 years, and at least worldwide. And so I think that what they have going for against them now is with Matt, they brought him in and he was energetic and wonderful, and you had to kind of get away from that, you know, stigma that David Tennant had left with the show. And it was a good stigma, don't get me wrong. And so Matt came in, hit the ground running, and was really, really energetic and great, and he brought it to where the level it is now. But I think if you try to start again with an unknown, you're going to lose a lot of that momentum.
Might lose some traction.
And so I think what they'll do is they'll realize that they've got to keep that momentum, they've got to keep that traction going, And by doing that, you bring in somebody familiar, at least, you know, a big name. Not, I don't want to say big name, not a huge name, but so at least somebody familiar.
Do we go familiar to English audiences, or?
Probably mostly familiar to English audiences, but I think you've got to do a Martin Freeman or a Benjamin Cumberbatch. I don't think those will
be. Benedict.
Benedict.
Benedict Cumberbatch. You got to do something that is familiar enough to the American audiences that have been captivated now too. I think so.
I think if we have a bigger name, it'll be an Eccleston type of situation.
Or they only come in for a year and.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think you could find somebody British that's been acting for several years. Not a Chris Eccleston who's only had a few. You know, he only had like a handful of films. I mean, probably 5 or 6 or 7 under his belt. Don't get me wrong. But I think there's probably some people, some British actors out there that they've done TV, they've done movies, and they're ready to come back and do some TV and maybe
just get that steady paycheck.
Yeah,
and
latch
onto
something that's routine.
Stay home with the kids on weekends. And
exactly, I think they can do that.
You know who would be? this is really thinking outside the box, but you know who I would really think would be a very fantastic, interesting doctor. If you want to talk crazy, oddball, Judy Dench.
I've seen that name thrown around a lot.
I'd be giddy with excitement to see that.
5-10 years ago, I could see it. Now I think she's gotten up there to an age that I think it would be very difficult,
probably,
for her and to carry the energy of the show now. But yeah, I don't know. And as far as hair goes, yeah, they'll have to have great hair.
Sorry, AJ, you're although
you're out.
Although McGann had
a wig,
he had a shaved head when he virtually shaved head because he had just done the military movie when
right.
he went in. Now they made him wear a wig, but you know, so we're not above casting somebody if you're willing to wear a wig. So work on that accent.
All right,
up next, Duck Phil. He writes. Comment, question, comment. Crow tastes remarkably like chicken. Hey, Hoopykins. Sorry I'm a little late getting this in. Saw the Star Trek spoiler message. Saw the time references. Mentioned to avoid. But still, I still treated the whole thing like a plague carrier just to be safe. So how are things? Saw the end of Series 7. I liked it a lot. Not my favorite series ender, but I enjoyed it a great deal. Part of the problem was the lack of conclusion, as has been previously stated. I realize that the cliffhanger season enders is the norm around here, but I enjoy having everything wrapped up too. So my thoughts on the episode. The Whispermen. Wow. I know your mileage may vary, but for me, these guys are up there with the Weeping Angels and the Silence. Such a neat concept, so creepy, and the rhyming whispering just wraps it all up nicely. And wait, we're done with the Whispermen? That was it? Apologies for the coarseness, but WTF? You introduce a foe that cool, and that's all the screen time they get? Did Darth Maul and the Phantom Menace teach you nothing? 2. Jenny during the conference call. As much as I love the character, I honestly think they should have killed her off for good there. The apologies and the tears, and then gone. It was a powerful moment that further cemented the seriousness of the Great Intelligence, and bringing her back was a mistake. Oh well, no one stays dead in Doctor Who, it seems. I'm looking at you, Dalek, / Cyberman, / Master, / Rassilon, etc.
Tracks.
Alright, gotta wrap...
He just fainted.
Alright, gotta wrap it up there. My condolences to Keith on the future tearjerker that will be the Christmas episode. On Duck Phil.
That's an interesting point. How much more would we have... What would our reactions have been to Name of the Doctor if Jenny had actually stayed dead? If that was the end of it?
I'd have been alright with her dying. She didn't serve any purpose beyond that anyway, so...
Yeah. Well, I mean... Other than the possibility of doing a spin-off series with those three characters, I don't see a reason to have
something that I noticed in hindsight, and maybe it was because of the fact that the Doctor knew that she had died and came back, but I don't know when he would have known that. He gives special consideration to Jenny when they're all there on the
entrance to the tomb, and he turns and he looks at her and kind of does this little smile and even says something to Jenny. You know, Jenny, you know, like, how are you doing? Like, special consideration. I thought that seemed kind of weird. It was like they had this little moment between them.
I didn't notice that.
And I thought, wow, that's strange. And then my mind started wheeling, and I thought, maybe they're covertly working this out so that she is the Jenny that we know of, and she's just regenerated, but the doctor's daughter.
Hasn't gone there yet.
Yeah, just haven't gone there yet. I don't know, it was weird. It just struck me as, wow, there was a little moment between her and the doctor, and that seemed interesting to me. So, anyway.
Maybe it's him being cautious around her on the heels of the kiss and slap.
Well, maybe that's exactly what it was. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
Up next is Chrissy.
Oh, sorry, I was distracted.
That's
me.
That's you.
Chrissy writes, The Fall of the 11th. Sorry, had to be done. Dear Vortex Boys, So much for a slow news cycle, eh? Well, I think I've gone through all the stages of grief in the past 24 hours, some of them multiple times, but I could have sworn I saw somewhere that Matt Smith was confirmed for Series 8, but apparently I got that wrong. I guess with Doctor Who, it's always a matter of when, not if, the current Doctor leaves. I'm going to miss Matt Smith a lot. He was the Doctor on TV when I started watching the show. Even though I didn't start with him, I feel like I've spent the most time revisiting and going over his stories because I've watched most of his era in real time. He was a wonderful actor, and I'm eager to see what he does next, although he's always going to be the Doctor to me no matter what other project he does. I'm grateful for what he did for the show and what a great ambassador he was for Doctor Who. And so, all I can really say is, thank you, Matt, for everything. As far as who comes next, I honestly have no idea who I'd like for the 12th Doctor. I know a lot of people have opinions and theories and wish lists, but I trust the powers that be to choose someone who'll be great and will carry the show into its post-50th anniversary life. If I have any kind of opinion, I'd like to be someone who isn't well-known or that's been around a whole lot before. I'd like to see someone completely new because that adds some excitement to the change. But like I said, I trust Stephen Moffat and the production team to make the right choice, and I'll be happy with whoever they or whatever they decide to do. I had a lot of other things to talk about from your show last week, and I can't remember what they all were. Oh, well, I do remember one. Brenda! I wish I lived in Atlanta so I could look you up and we could go have lunch or something and just talk. The stuff we talk about on feedback is so similar. When you write in and I'm listening to the podcast, I start yelling, yes, 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 at my iPod in the car. It's a good thing I don't carpool or anything, because people who see me in these cars at these moments is bad enough. I agree with a lot of what you say, but last week's feedback was exceptionally good, and I just wanted to thank you for it. Reviews! Faith Stealer. Overall, this was an enjoyable story. I like the whole religious marketplace concept, and it seems to work well for these people. Of course, then you get some goofball alien that wants to ruin it for everyone else and take over. I liked exploring Cariz's backstory and how he's coping with killing his fiancée, i.e., not at all. And the Doctor and Charlie were pretty good here, too. I don't have a lot to say about this story other than I enjoyed it. The last. Well, this was a depressing story. Companion deaths, guilt about companion deaths, past and present. A really, 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 really annoying dictator. I was not sorry to see her fall into that volcano. And everyone has to die for the planet to survive. I can't hate this story because it had a lot of interesting ideas and philosophies and it was well written and acted. But at the same time, I am not a fan of these depressing humanity or monster sci-fi stories. Much the same reason I don't watch Torchwood. Like I said, it's a well-constructed story, but it's just not my cup of tea. I'm sure there are people out there who like this kind of stuff. I'm not one of them. Well, I have a carton of butter pecan ice cream that I need to go cry into while I watch The 11th Hour on repeat, so I'll wrap this up and send it along. Chrissy. Just an afterthought, and I saw it on Twitter, so I can't take sole credit for it. I wonder if the Christmas special will be called 12th Night. Seeing as the traditional 12th night holiday is associated That's with cool. Christmas and New Year's, and it would be a cheeky nod on Moffat's part, not to mention keeping with his theme of taking cues from literature for his Christmas specials. Maybe. Possibly. I don't know. It was a thought. I'm just going to go get that ice cream now.
Oh.
Thanks, Chrissy.
Yep.
Up next, Brenda.
Brenda writes, The End of an Era. Dear Vortex Gang, just a brief note this week to weigh in along with everyone else on Matt Smith leaving Doctor Who. I have to say that I'm not surprised, but I'm incredibly sad to see him go. I had been reading lately about how much he was enjoying the movie he's currently filming, as well as how he loved his first foray into directing. With so many exciting ventures outside the world of Who, I was actually surprised when he said he would continue to Series 8. Both Karen Gillan and Arthur Darvill have seen their careers take off like skyrockets since leaving Who, and I'm sure that Matt's will be on an even higher plane. That being said, my heart hurts at the thought of not seeing that wonderful quirky face in the new series. As I've mentioned before, David Tennant was the one who first led me to Doctor Who. But the first episode I saw was Waters of Mars, so I didn't have long to fall in love with him before he regenerated. Going back and watching all of the previous New Who episodes to catch up before 11th Hour, Tim became firmly seated in my heart, and I was a bit hesitant to embrace any other Doctor. But Matt Smith had me at hello, and over the course of his run, he has assumed a place in my affections equal with David Tennant. It's like how you love your children. Each is wonderful and different, and your relationship with each of them is unique, but you can't choose between them. You just can't choose between them. I don't want to speculate about who will be chosen as 12, because I doubt I could imagine anyone as wonderful as Moffat is sure to find. Excuse me. His casting decisions up to now have been impeccable, both for Doctor Who and for Sherlock, and he has a special ability to find the perfect person out of a field of unknowns. He loves the show and is grounded in its history as well as its unknown.
As its future.
I skipped up a line again. As well as its future, so I'm trusting that Moff once more will deliver us someone amazing. I'm sorry, my glasses are blurring here.
Those darn bifocals.
It's the tears in my eyes. No. So here's to another birth on Christmas Day. We still have the 50th special and the Christmas special to build some more memories with Matt. Until then, I am revisiting seasons 5 through 7 and basking in the wonderful, goofy, and lovable 11th Doctor. I'm sure I'll be weeping along with everyone else when that yellow light streams out of his body for the last time and he takes his final curtain call. But at the same time, I'll be wishing him the best and thanking him for a great run. Brenda in Atlanta.
Well said.
Well said.
Well said.
Finally tonight, Holly. Holly writes in, The Faith Stealer and the Lost. Hey guys, great last podcast. Love the feedback song for last week. I was just singing along with the chorus.
Thank you.
Faith Stealer. Not a bad story. You really don't know who to trust in this episode. The Doctor shouldn't have trusted Gefalt as much as he did when he left Kara's in his care and strictly told him no treatments whatsoever. The whole idea with the Miraculite was interesting. I was really flipping back and forth about the bored Nan, the whole story, wondering if she was really bad or just trying to make sure that her city survives no matter what the cost. The last, Lady Excelsior of Borchazoi, really reminded me a bit of Lady Cassandra in the opening scenes of the story. It was rather interesting how her helpers really kept her in the dark about what was actually happening on her planet, just letting her get ready for big speeches for her people. Kroka using Adric and Katrina's shadows/images in the Doctor's mind made me feel for the Doctor, and I think made him that much more determined to get to the bottom of what was going on and find the TARDIS. The last part of the story with Charlie and... Every time I see his name spelled out, it's not what I think.
Cariz.
Yeah, Cariz. That's not how they say it. Cariz. Had me tearing up. I think Lady Excelsior learned her lesson at the end of the story about being careful what you wish or ask for, because it might not be exactly what you wanted. Looking forward to hearing what you and others thought of these two audios. Holly from Wisconsin.
Thank you, Holly.
Well, shall we move on to our reviews?
Yeah, absolutely.
First up, Faith Stealer. When the Eighth Doctor, Charlie, and Cariz have a nightmarish vision while traveling through the Interzone, the Kroka offers the perfect way out. The Multihaven is a community holding many religious faiths in seeming harmony. But when the balance is upset, it might spell doom for the travelers.
I'm going to give it a bump on concept and not quite so much on execution. The concept I loved.
It's a really neat idea.
Yeah,
I'm the same way. I thought the concept was intriguing. The execution was just kind of meh.
And I think that's one of the problems. I'm not really sure once you set up this fantastic idea, where do you go with it? I think that was... This to me was very indicative of a lot of great science fiction thinking in the way that you read a book or you see a movie or something, and it's one of those really high-minded, wow, that is a great idea, but then the adventure that you have within the framework of what you've created is just kind of meh. This is a fantastic...
That happens, yeah. I wouldn't say this was a high-minded idea.
Oh, I think this to me was an example of world-building. This was a fantastic, the marketplace and the bazaar and the city and these different religions and even the craziness. Which
I thought
felt
it was a commentary. It was a commentary on religion.
Yeah. It could be.
It totally was. And that one ultimately always tries to rise to the top. I mean, that's what the story is here.
And you don't have to have spirituality for religion.
You don't have to have religion for spirituality either. Yes. I think that's one of the things they were conveying.
But no, I loved the so much effort went into creating this fantastic world and little elements of what felt like Douglas Adams with the Church of Serendipity.
Yeah, no. I didn't think it quite got there, but it was. I could see it. It was like it was an attempt. But it just didn't quite get there as far as.
And the start where they get there and the religion of the tourists.
Yes, that was very good.
Yeah, all of that was fantastic.
There's a lot of great moments in this story.
And we worship Chris here.
Yeah. And we will require tea at high noon.
With a ceremonial cup of tea.
All of that was fantastic. Unfortunately, there's this plot about the one religion trying to take over with the, Miraculite. And it's like, why not just call it Unobtainium? it is to that level of ridiculousness with this. And I was a little confused as to the chamber box that he...
Anyone else think they found the TARDIS?
Yeah, I really thought so. And I was like, wow, this is going to have really, really, really dire implications that we've chucked all this stuff in there. And it's not just that it's going to be bad. It's that, oh, wow, this could be catastrophic. This could unleash the, you know... And no, it's just a cabinet that's bigger on the inside and doesn't really. What? Where did this come from?
I think part of it's the resolution.
Poor execution there.
Execution and resolution and explanation.
That's the thing is we weave this fantastic story through three parts, and then you guys always complain about this, and I never see it. And this time I see it, and just wrap it all up right at the end. Boom! What is it with Big Finish where they feel like they put together these great stories and then they look at the clock and go, oh, we're a bit long, let's just wrap this up. I mean, that's my biggest disappointment with this is the fact that it ends so abrupt and we just kind of tied up at the end with words and we're off to our next adventure. So I don't know. I like the idea. I like the concept of it. I don't think we really kind of figured out what was wrong with Kariz. And so I expected that to carry over to the next story, which it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I thought that... I love the idea of the fact that the Doctor keeps chasing the TARDIS. And he can't see it, but he hears it materialize. But then he comes back with this very heavy news for Charlie about what he saw... But he doesn't deliver it heavily. That's what was weird to me, is I thought he would be a little more...
It's almost like he didn't believe it once he was saying it.
I mean, maybe that's kind of what it is. Maybe it's that shock value that, you know, you just kind of portray it. So that was kind of weird. But no, I mean, I like the symbolism of the fact that, you know, there's this society that thinks that they can be accepting of all religions and can be made up of all religions. The attempt to balance something like that, and then it's not going to work. I mean, ultimately what's weird, though, is the Doctor leaves the society to be set up that way again.
Yeah.
And I think that's just going to happen again.
But it almost seems like because of who he left it who he left in charge, well, it might not be the same.
But see,
because of what she went through.
Part of me thinks, though, that the first, what do they call her?
The Bordenin?
The Bordenin, the first Bordenin, was very grounded as well. I just, you know, maybe she just let it get away from her. But he does talk about setting up the new gal because she's experienced it and seen what failures it has. But I don't know. It just seems strange. I mean, I guess it's like the Prime Directive. You don't mess with you don't mess with what is already there. But I mean, ultimately, I think the moral of the story is when you put religions together, ultimately one tries to rise to the top and dominate everybody and convert everybody. So that's really all I got out of it. It was an okay, it was a fine story, but nothing great.
One of the things I noticed in this and the next one, while they keep trying to, like, they're trying to shoehorn in the fact that they're in the Divergent universe on this.
Yeah, see, I disagree. I think it
felt like so much of this was just standard universe.
This is no different than any of the other stories, Keith. They walk through this, what do they call the
interzone?
They walk through these interzones and then they pop into their next story. I mean, that's ultimately what has been happening the whole time. Now, we've been having some more conversation abstracts with
the Kroka.
Kroka. But beyond that, it's been par for the course. So there's nothing different. I don't have anything shoehorned
other than Scherzo.
Scherzo, yeah. Scherzo sets it up and is very different. I mean, that's the starting point. Yeah.
That's the problem that I had with it, is that Scherzo was such a vast departure from anything we'd ever heard or experienced before that I was thinking this was what the whole universe was going to be like.
Yeah.
Well, and instead, it sets up the idea that anything can happen in this universe.
Right. The laws of physics don't apply.
But
it turns out that they do, because we fall into...
And it's the exact same laws of physics and the exact same everything else.
And I think we're going somewhere with that. And that's the point. That's why I brought up the point. It's like we're walking from Petri dish to Petri dish. I mean, it's really this grand experiment, and that's what the Kroka's there for. And and even the doctor suspected that at the end of the last one we listened to.
It's true.
So
they got away from that idea a little bit with these two, I think, in that
there
wasn't as much of a Petri dish feel in either of these stories, except for the fact, and we'll get to this, but at the very, very end of the last, the doctor's response to "Hey, what the hell?" and click kind of leads me to believe that his kind of like delivering the news to Charlie.
I would agree with that.
I think he's figured it out at this point. I think
he figured it out before that, but I think
he's just trying.
He's still going through the motions because that's what you do on your adventures.
Yeah,
but I mean, another thing in this particular one, Faith Stealer, is that what it's called?
Faith Stealer.
What made me think about that is when she says, if you believe the legends, there were two kids and they argued about... Nobody knows how they came about here. And that's the idea in this one, is nobody can remember their past. I mean, nobody can remember... They know these versions of history that set up each civilization, but they never really have this concept of a history, or, you know, so that's another thing that really came across in that one, is if you believe the legend, she said it three times in her speech,
mm-hmm.
and or when she's conveying that, and so that was the one there was like, okay, well, whatever this is a concocted society by somebody, a greater power somewhere.
See, I didn't get that.
Just it felt like that again.
I got the impression, because that was the Bordenin talking.
Yes,
I got the impression it was her trying to stay impartial to not. I believe this also. It was her, like, you would say...
Not showing partiality to anyone.
Yeah, you don't say if you believe the legend.
If you believe the legend, Zeus was God.
Yeah, that's a different thing, because you're talking about pure history of how it started, not anybody's particular religion.
I don't remember them talking... I remember her saying that about the history of the religion.
No.
I don't remember
this
part.
It was the history of the society, of the Multihaven.
Oh, how the Multihaven started.
There were two kids, and they both argued forever about who was right.
Okay.
And then ultimately, they built up these two different shanty towns, and it became all one thing, because everybody had their own beliefs, and they decided that it was okay to let everybody.
See, I guess I just didn't read into that more than the origin of the Multihaven.
It was the origin of the Multihaven.
Yeah, but I didn't read more into it.
She keeps saying that...
if you believe... Yeah,
if you believe the legend. I think
This is what
you
the legend
shouldn't
is.
Be saying. This is the legend. You should be saying, "Well, this is our history, how it became." So it gives me the impression that nobody really knows how it started. So that's
well,
what I say.
I got more of that impression in the last than this.
Well, again, that happens again in the last, and I think ultimately that they still feel like there is some overseer at least that's looking in on these adventures. And the doctor makes reference in the last that it's part of a test. It's that, you know, everything's part of the test. And I can't remember what reference that was, but
when they asked why he was sent here.
Yeah, that's
which,
right.
Which
that's
that was that. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself, but
yeah. Well, we can move on to the last because I'm done with Faith Stealer. I mean, it was okay. It wasn't a painful listen, so that's important.
Yeah,
that's true. I liked it. I mean, aside from the.
It was very enjoyable. Yeah,
that's just it.
It was the better of the two stories.
It was definitely the better of the two stories. And once again, Paul McGann and Charlie have this fantastic back and forth where they are what is rising to the top of this Divergent Universe bit, is that at the very least I can take away that they're going to be good.
Oh,
even
yeah.
Here, and then they're not in the last. Yeah. That's the problem.
Yeah. I don't know. Anything
Let's
else?
Talk about the last because we're getting to end
of it. You kind of cut me off earlier.
I'm sorry.
I'm continue.
Sorry. Go ahead.
It's just they keep saying in this is a different universe, anything can happen, but they're not showing us that. They're dropping these lines of this is a different universe. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what will cause this, and it's the exact same as it always is.
I've gotten over that.
Part of that, I think, if we're right about this idea of the petri dish that we're just walking from experimental society within this. What I think has happened is that all of these entities, beings, whatever, none of this is in a Divergent Universe. I think that's unfortunately going to be the hook, is that we are a Divergent Universe.
Did you listen to the preview for next
no,
the next
didn't.
Show? Did you listen to
it? Yeah, I did.
I was so disgusted with the Lost.
And he's saying there shouldn't be clocks because there's no concept of time here.
But see, that's the thing. They say there's no concept of time here, but then multiple people reference time constantly. Yeah, it's not consistent.
Well, that's my complaint. I leave to his theory that we're not really
now, in fairness, universe. Part of that is the writer's trap. Because when you conceive of something that you go, there's no time, how do you convey that to creatures that live in time, mark time, and understand time the way we do? Yeah. You can conceptualize it, but that's about it.
That's true.
The closest you ever get, in my opinion, of doing something along those lines is when Sisko is in the wormhole in Deep Space Nine, and they're talking about the fact that he understands time linearly, but the prophets don't.
Yes.
And they try to have that conversation, and it's almost remedial math, but that's the best example of something like that I've seen come down. You come up with this concept, and then you very quickly realize, I can't write that, because how long have you been here? That's a dumb question. I can't ask that. When did this happen? Oh, wait, I can't ask that. Are you a survivor? I mean, all of a sudden everything
should have realized
fuzzy.
That in the first story
right.
and fixed it.
I agree. Well, that's just it. The minute you come up with that concept, you have to have a way out of there. You can't just go, ta-da, and then get six stories in and go, oh. That doesn't really work,
but they've always done it.
The other thing
I agree. But
the other thing you both did is you went, oh, Divergent Universe, this could be interesting. But you knew it was Big Finish. They were going to stay with the status quo type story. And because they gave you Scherzo first, it was such a thinking outside the box. You guys really set your expectations up.
Yeah,
did. And so as soon as that next story came along and it was just a run-of-the-mill story, I did the more, well, this feels more like Big Finish. You know, you guys went, oh, this is disappointing. The Divergent Universe isn't as good as we anticipated.
Well,
I think you guys built it up more than they did.
I think they
Zagreus
set it up
didn't
there.
Even set that up that high.
I don't know.
They set it up, this is a whole weird wilderness that we've never heard of, and we don't know what's going to happen here.
The Scherzo did that. But.
And the doctors
The Zagreus did. When they went there.
Zagreus set it up with the idea of we don't know what's out there.
Yes. And even...
Yes,
and
they simply said that.
And even Neverland.
And Scherzo going... Anything could happen. I mean, my God, we've been walking for years and we're eating amoebas and we're doing all... I mean, it was just such a departure from everything that had come before. That was now where the bar is set for us. But then it didn't turn out to be. Now, here's what I think is going to happen, is I think that in addition to walking through these petri dish ideas, I'm going to go one step further and say that all of these aliens that we've encountered actually do exist somewhere in the real universe, and they have been plucked from the real universe into this pocket, whatever this is, this laboratory, if we're going to stick with this analogy, by Rassilon or by whoever is the one behind all of this. And that so that that's why we still have the same political machinations. We still have the same this. Even though it is different, it's still our world reality, or you know, our universe realities that the Doctor keeps finding himself in. And I think he's beginning to figure that out.
It makes me wonder, because the Time Lords use the Divergent Universe to send people to, you know, to basically disintegrate them, as they thought they were doing, but send them to this Elseworld. And so I also wonder if maybe some of these other species, that's how... They got there as they were sent there, essentially. Yeah. So, and then whoever's there utilizing them is it would definitely fit in
with what we learned in Zagreus. It would definitely fit in with the idea of the time scoops and all of that technology from the five doctors that we just didn't indiscriminately. We'd grab people and bring them here for games.
Right.
Why not send them somewhere?
Right.
Why bring them to Gallifrey? Why not send them somewhere? I can totally see that that's where they're going with this, is that they just, we're going to scoop up a whole society. Or maybe these societies actually...
See, I always got the impression that they didn't send them there on purpose. That just, they took someone out of the time, unmade them, where they had needed, those people had to go somewhere. They didn't choose where they went. They just...
Well, maybe they didn't.
By unmaking somebody, created this Divergent Universe.
Right.
And the impression I got from the story.
Maybe that was whoever... Let's assume it was Rassilon, for the sake of argument, that he created the technology that would do this, but then the underlings who were using it didn't know the mechanics of where they went.
Yeah.
It wasn't actually a teleport that they were aware of. They were just disassembling your molecules and being done with you, not knowing that they're actually beaming in this, but Rassilon knew that when he created it. I can totally see that too. And maybe the societies, maybe they didn't scoop up a whole society. Maybe it's just that the society grew up over, you know, person A and person B who were disassembled, wound up over here, and they hooked up and now have a society that, you know, they were the two brothers and everything sprang up around them over, you know, whatever their beliefs were. I don't know. It's just, I could totally see that we're still, there's enough, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but there's enough real world physics in play that lead me to believe that at least some of the rules come from somewhere else, as opposed to being this completely divergent universe.
All right, let's move on to the last.
Trapped on a dying world, the Doctor, Charlie, and Keres comes face to face with people responsible for the war to end the wars. Will anybody, however, survive to get off planet before the war comes to an end at last?
That's about all I have to say about that.
They did some really bold things in this, I thought, of actually paralyzing Charlie.
Like, yeah, and then the Doctor not seeming very concerned.
Yeah.
And then the Queen of Hearts killing her. And then the Doctor not seeming very concerned. Chris was more upset about it than the Doctor was. That left me a little flat.
Here's the deal. Had we paralyzed Charlie, Doctor concerned or otherwise, because most of his, you're going to be fine, you're going to get up, you're going to walk, that's very Doctor. Okay, I'm with you there. And then killed Charlie. I'd have been genuinely, like, edge of my seat. What are you doing? Is this how we're going to end this?
What have you done?
Except for the B plot, which introduced the idea of ghosts. You have automatically destroyed this story now, because I know there's something else behind that, so I know she's not dead.
That's what I suspected, was that we would see she'd come back as a ghost.
Which she didn't come back as much as I thought she would.
No, she didn't come back at all.
Just the voice.
Yeah, we do hear that voice. That's right, we do hear the voice.
And that's how when the Doctor knows she died, yeah.
And I'm sorry, Divergent Universe or no, the Doctor trying to go, I don't know, maybe the idea of everybody perishing in this atomic blast, how many ghosts were there? It's like, dude, come on, really?
No.
This is an exercise in academica for you. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe I am too much of a Who fan to buy into these types of stories anymore. But I go back to what I said. With Hyde, you introduce ghosts, you've automatically bored me to tears for 90% of your episode until you give me the hook. Uh-huh. And so I'm treading water waiting for you to get to the hook. And
so... Let me ask you about the setup to this, because the
Croca.
Croca. Oh, I can't remember that. Croca sets up visions of Katarina from
Took me a minute with that one.
I didn't recognize that one.
Dalek's master plan. And Adric from Earthshock. Two companions that died. And I thought, well, that's kind of wild. And he makes the comment about it pains you to see former companions. And he says, no, it pains me the fact that they're dead, that they died. And he says, so it's guilt that bothers you about this. And he says, yes. And so then I think, oh, what a great setup. Something's going to happen here, which ultimately it does with both Charlie and Chris. Chris. Dying. But it almost seems like there was a reason, there was a point for that didn't really feel fulfilled for me.
I would agree.
The waving of the magic wand at the very end, with him pushing the button, blowing everybody up, and then stepping through into this, oh, this is what actually happened, is we defeated the bad guys, and we reached the price armistice, and isn't it beautiful and happy? The whole thing feels like it's just the Croaker going, ha, I'm poking the doctor with a stick.
Yeah.
Look, the whole thing was all in your head because it didn't really happen. Which angered me.
Yeah.
Because then it felt like, thanks for wasting 3 hours of my time, Big Finish.
Exactly.
I was very angry. I'm totally with Chrissy on this.
That's exactly what these two are. This is the Faith Stealer is this wonderful romp with some very, it was very humorous, had some clever points. And then wrap it up really quick at the end. And then this one was go for a long time and drag it out and for an unfulfilling ending. I mean, it was just, I don't know.
I didn't like the last pretty much at all.
And Excelsior didn't help it either.
Yeah, that was the Queen of Hearts, right?
Yeah.
Execute him. There's only five of us left. Does that make any sense to execute somebody?
Before even the quote-unquote title or the credits roll on the first episode, I wanted her killed. It's just, she was just grating the entire time. And it was always a breath of fresh air when we went someplace that wasn't with her.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of it, of them coming out to this nuclear winter and then exploring the ideas of what they tried to do with
bunker
it.
Bunker life.
The bunker life. And this...
It's an intriguing concept. This
insane ruler of how do you tell her what really happened, and she's expecting to go out there and everything's going to be okay, and it's all been much worse than we ever imagined, and we've destroyed the planet because we keep having war after war. It's another commentary, obviously.
Yeah. I love the idea of the fact that she's the reason why she is the way she is because they've always been feeding her with positive information for longer than they could tell.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Here's the problem with that is they set her up almost at that point to be this sympathetic character because while she's obviously quite mad, it's the politicians lying to her.
Mm-hmm.
But then she keeps making these snide comments about, oh, politicians lie. Of course they lie. They all lie. And then they've got this other character, Landskar, who's obviously telling her some of the truth.
Yeah. That was the other thing is that they introduced Landskar, and the two politicians are like, we don't know this guy. What, you know, you're not supposed to be here. And she's like, well, he is supposed to be here. I authorize him to be here. And then so they have this conversation later after they leave, after the politicians leave, and you almost get the impression that she knows, like she really knows what has happened, but she's just playing along. But then they kind of like get away from that later.
And then they come back to it again. Yeah.
But much later when it's already
way later.
And then it doesn't really make sense where they do revisit it because at that point he's on to basically trying to convince the doctor of I do like the fact that they try to rocket off the planet.
Well, they essentially do.
Oh, full props to the Big Finish audio department for the rocket noise, which right when I was getting to that, okay, get on with it, we're in a rocket, I get it, my ears popped because it was very airplane pressure cabin. You know that noise when you take off and it's like, of the air, my ears literally went. And it had nothing to do with the interior cabin pressure of my car. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, just, it was all audio. And I was like, okay, that was cool. I'll give you points for that. But that's about all I can give you points for on this. Even Paul McGann, who I normally will praise to the ends of the earth, I can't praise in this one because he was very blasé. He sleptwalked his way through this.
Yeah.
And I'm really hoping that's because the doctor's figured it out at this point, that he is just going through the motions. Unfortunately, when we get to that big reveal moment in whatever the last of the Divergent Universe stories is, and he goes, oh, I've known about this since such and such time, it's going to be like, you could have saved us all the agony.
Yeah. All of the angst.
And the angst and the frustration. Why play along? Why not just go, I'm done? Yeah. You know? Really is where I'm at with these.
I did a little looking after listening to the last. And there's two more in the Divergent Universe. Apparently, those two weren't intended to be the last.
These were intended to be the last?
No, the next two weren't. They were going to go longer, but they wanted to get back to the real universe because the show was coming back. They didn't want to throw...
I thought it was because the Divergent Universe wasn't working.
So what I'm saying is, it could if it weren't for the show coming back and them wanting to get back to the normal universe and not try to alienate any new listeners that might come to Big Finish because of the show, they ended the Divergent Universe storyline sooner.
Thank you, Russell T. Davies.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Now, I did think that... they had me going for a moment with Lansgar, because I started playing with the way he talked and the way that he was manipulating her and knew things that he probably shouldn't and appeared out of nowhere. I began to think Lansgar, and I started rearranging letters going R-A-S. This could be Rassilon. No. Is it Lan or Land? Is it D? Darn, it doesn't work. Okay, this is not enough. Well, I thought they were pulling an extra anagram right. on
And I knew almost instantly, as soon as the ghost with Kara's gave his name, Requiem.
Yeah totally. On.
That's obvious. He's really a ghost. That's so obvious.
My name is Requiem. I worked in the library. So you're either truly dead or you're a computer hologram. Give it to me straight. Oh,
it would have been
kind of
cooler if
okay.
they would have gone with computer hologram from Time Machine.
Yeah. That would have at least been interesting. Because that would have been Doctor Who, as opposed to Ghost, which is not. I'm trying to find other things.
I don't have as big of a problem with the ghosts as you do. I agree with
the Doctor's reaction. Explain them away.
The Doctor's reaction to it. But because they keep telling us this is a different universe, things aren't the same, I took the ghosts as an example of things aren't the same. I mean, this whole world essentially was rebooted when the Doctor hit the button. So, I mean, and it had been repeating and repeating and repeating.
Do you think that's really what happened, or do you think it was just an illusion the Croca put in there?
They made it talk like the last was Excelsior, and the legend was the last would continue to be the last until a new last came in. Like, it was just in a constant loop, and they've constantly warring. That's why nobody ever had kids, because there was no children. They didn't have any way of giving...
Which was another fantastic idea that went nowhere when
yeah.
they made that revelation.
But I think that's the idea that they were setting up for this is a loop until something, a variable comes in to cause change. And that variable was the Doctor.
Which definitely, in my mind, cements the Petri dish.
Well, I think you're both right. I think that's exactly what the concept of this was, and what the concept of what it was supposed to be. But I also think that it was the Croca, that when he pushed
causing
the reset
this.
Button,
yeah.
I don't think it really was. I don't think it really happened. I think that was the idea that is planted. I think that's what the Doctor's meant to believe. Is what happened, but I'm with Sean. I think the Croca kind of, this was all a simulation, and the Croca had something to do with that simulation.
So. I kind of did too at the end.
Yeah. Weird.
But that's where they were. You know,
yeah,
you're
but and,
right.
and so then the ghost, because of all this other stuff and oh, the physics actually don't apply here. There actually could be ghosts.
They're echoes.
They're echoes.
That's what I bought from that. It was as they were setting this up. I also didn't have a problem with it because I thought Divergent Universe. These are echoes of the past, not necessarily spiritual manifestations.
And it's almost like, especially knowing the end, going back and thinking about it, it's like people that got that are on the sidelines waiting to come back to play.
Yeah, if you go with the spiritual reincarnation type thing.
If this universe is constantly on reboot...
A horrible game of tag.
They're on the sidelines waiting to come back in and start over. And when it gets near the end, they can actually start bleeding through the realities. I mean, I guess that's how I justified it, the ghosts in my mind, especially knowing the resolution.
Well, and I hate
but I didn't have a problem with it, regardless.
I hate to be the nitpicky ghost guy. I really, because you know, if you're asking me, myself, am I open to the idea of ghosts for real? Sure, why not?
Which is funny because I'm not. I'm the complete opposite. There is absolutely no realm of possibility in real life that there could actually be spirits.
That's one of those things I don't have a problem with, but because it's been so firmly established that. It's not. I don't know. If the doctor ever came out and said, I believe in ghosts, I believe in the possibility of ghosts, why not? Then maybe I'd be a little more accepting of it within the Doctor Who universe. But because he has always said, no, then I'm like, no. Quit trying to force them on me. Quit trying to make me believe this is what's going on in this story. Because it isn't. I don't know. I've even gone so far as to look ahead a little bit. Just to see if the writer, Gary Hopkins, is going to subject us to any more. And he does. He has one other Eighth Doctor story that I've been able to find called Other Lives.
Well, if we're back in the regular universe, maybe it'll be okay. Other Lives?
Yeah, it's about ghosts,
oh,
I bet.
No.
I don't know. Maybe we're being terribly unfair. Like I said, I really hope that there's that one end cap story that kind of resolves everything and explains all the problems and all the questions. Did anybody else have that weird moment?
Well, based on what he found, I'm thinking that they probably wrapped this all up really
probably
quick.
Too neatly.
Yeah, well, and it probably won't be.
I
answered the way that we want it to be answered.
I don't know. I kind of think that they probably had these two written. This is going to be the finale. Oh, okay. This is going to be our resolution. Let's fill more stories to make it last longer.
I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right too.
Did anybody else get that weird moment when Kariz was kind of giving his story about the Corman did this and the Corman did that and kind of reflecting back on now this is the bug episode that I remember we all kind of went we hated this one. But it was kind of like, yeah, the Cormon. That was a good one.
Well, that
unlike what I'm listening to.
Well,
now,
yeah. Now that we've gone through some real turkeys. It's like, yeah.
But did anybody else get that
one? Wasn't so bad. Was it?
That moment of separation and going? Where did we come from? I don't know. I just this was a really, really maybe it's too high minded for me. Maybe the idea of this city being on a loop and everything, but I
didn't feel this one was all that high-minded. A little more high-minded than the last one, but not. I didn't feel this.
I gotta agree with Chrissy. It was a downer and a depressing, and you know,
it was kind of like Children of Men.
Yeah, in a way. But I liked Children of Men, which was I don't know. It's kind of odd. I like my despots to either be crazy or delusional from the outset.
What was Children of Men?
The movie, the Clive Owen movie.
Okay.
It's dark and depressing.
It is dark and depressing. But it's
not as
really
dark
good.
And depressing as The Road.
I haven't seen that one.
That's depressing.
I don't know. I just I like them to be crazy from the outset so that I know what I'm getting into. And when they kind of reveal them as crazy, but then give them method to the madness, and then reveal them as being crazy, and then give them method to the madness, it's kind of like, will you stop toying with my emotions and let me know if this is the bad guy or not? I'm confused.
I got nothing else.
Yeah, me neither.
I'd like to apologize on behalf to our listeners.
I'm
just ready to be out of the Divergent
I'm so
universe.
Ready to be out of the Divergent universe.
I'm actually glad that there's only two left. So.
And I'm really enjoying Kariz still.
You are?
Yeah.
I enjoy Kariz.
And I like his exploration in the last story. I like his and Charlie's interactions.
Here's the problem, though, with Kariz, is I enjoy him as a character, but we fail to explore what's going on with the character enough in each story because we had this him dealing with the the death of his lover, the killing of his lover, which I thought was fantastic. Okay, this happened back in
Creed of the Corman.
Yeah, the Corman episode. And so I thought, oh, hey, we're going to revisit this. Now he's dealing with this. And then they pluck him into this, you know, chair where the guy's just going to kind of just take it out of him. And they don't really go anywhere with it.
Yeah. And we don't know whether or not that's left.
Yeah,
we don't know if
they actually did. And then in this one, I'm expecting there to be some fallout or consequence to what happened in the last one. No, nothing. Everything's kind of back to normal.
Yeah, reset.
Although they do have this wonderful connection that he makes with Charlotte. and the fact that he's grieving more over Charlie's death than even the doctor is. The doctor is just... did not... Yeah. I guess I'm more forgiving with the fact that because of how it ended, why the doctor didn't react more. I just wanted the doctor to react to Charlie's death more. I wanted him to grieve more. Yeah. He just didn't.
He just didn't. Mm. Especially after everything that he and Charlotte have
gotten through
to get here.
Yes.
And beyond. Maybe it's still Zagreus at the helm. I don't know.
All that anti-time.
One other thing that I think is kind of interesting that I thought maybe I picked up on it. Maybe I'm completely clueless. You guys let me know. We've had the Creed of the Corman, which to me is a very religious-esque title. The Creed. That's a, you know. The Natural History of Fear is the one where they're in Light City. And I don't remember that there was a lot of faith in that one. Except for the idea of...
Oh, it's the faith in your country and your government.
The faith in the government, that they were doing the right thing, and the editor and the programmer. Patriotism, yeah. That kind of stuff. And then we had Twilight Kingdom, which was the really horrible one with the planet that turned out to be alive. And your faith in your military leader, that what he was doing was the right thing, and your faith in your platoon and that kind of stuff. Then we had the Faith Stealer, which is obviously a religious slant. And then we've got the last, which is this faith kind of bound issue that they were faithful to their thing.
So here's what says they're
and,
they
it's and
a
they make
faith.
All these constant
here's
references.
What they
to
are.
It.
They're all steeped in a hierarchy, a structure of the society. Right. They're all steeped in that, and I've been noticing that all along too. Yeah.
So I wonder if there's not something that's further at play here. That maybe this is the Bad Wolf reference, is this idea of faith, that this is kind of the recurring threat. Not only are we in this divergent universe, but it's all a question of faith. And I hope that I'm wrong, because if it comes down to the last one and it's all the doctors, oh, you just need to have faith in yourself. Click your heels together and you can go home again. I'm going to be pissed. I am going to go off.
Do you like
that? Oh, shut up.
What's coming up on
the power to go home was within you all along. All you have to do is wish for the TARDIS to show up, and it will. Oh, I will be angry. Next week for Friday Night Who on the 7th of June, Peter Davidson, Nicola Bryant, Planet of Fire.
Planet of Fire. Have you bought it yet?
I have not, but I will.
Okay.
Because you've bought the last several Fifth Doctor stories. I've noticed that seems to be the majority of what you own is Fifth Doctor. So.
Yeah, I bought Kinda and Snake Dance.
Which we still haven't got to. But we'll get to them. So I'll pick that one up. But we're doing that for Friday Night Who. And then your homework for next week is Big Finish number 24, The Eye of the Scorpion, which is a Fifth Doctor and Perry story. And Planet of Fire, we'll be discussing that on the show. And then the very big exciting news is the following week on Tuesday they release Inferno and Mind of Evil, and we'll be doing Inferno, at least the first four parts for Friday Night Who, and then kind of having the first part of our fifth Doctor retrospectives, because we're going to cover the IDW comic book, we're going to talk about the Revisited special, and the big finish, Destiny of the Doctor 5.
That's in 2 weeks. 3 weeks.
Two.
Three.
3 weeks. That's in 3 weeks.
On the show in two.
Oh, okay.
Tonight.
Okay.
Planet of Fire, then the Fifth Doctor stuff. But not the Fifth Doctor anniversary discussion. That'll be the week
of
June.
The final week of
June. That'll be the final week of June. So, no, well, not even that.
First week in July?
A week before the week of June. End of week of June.
Oh. Yeah, I guess we're only 2 days into
2 days into June so far. So there's that. And more exciting news on the way, which I will get posted here shortly to the website. I might want to throw out that, hey, you might want to think about buying Trial of the Time Lord for everybody out there listening. It's coming up in July. So there's that.
That was not on Netflix. Trial is not on Netflix.
Okay. And it's a big box set, so save your pennies.
Save your pennies. All right.
But it is available on our Amazon.
Amazon store. Yeah, please.
But
go there.
You haven't bought Planet of Fire, I'm gonna spoil this. I'm sorry. If you haven't bought Planet of Fire yet, don't buy Planet of Fire on our Amazon site because the price on that one jumped up to like $48 this week.
What?
Yeah.
There must be a special edition coming out.
Oh, don't do that to me. I thought it was a special
edition. That's usually what happens when they announce a special edition or get ready to announce a special edition.
Maybe I'll change it. I don't want to buy it.
Because what they do is they go up because if there's a special edition coming, then they try to push those prices up so they can try to make that. And then when the special edition comes out, or even when it's announced, then they drop that price way back down because they
Planet of Fire
once that's been dropped.
Is more on Amazon right now. Planet of Fire is more than Trial of the Time Lord.
That's what happened to Talons of Wenchang there for a while.
It's $50.
Yeah, that's what happened to Talons.
For the one story.
Maybe I'll change it. I don't want to spend that.
For one
story.
You
haven't bought it.
No, I haven't bought it yet. I just said that I would. But if there's a special edition coming out, if that's the pattern, that's what's happened to me every single time. I go out and go, I bought! Oh, there's a special edition coming out 2 months later. Damn it.
All right. Okay, well, that's gonna do
I'll let you know what we're doing next week.
And that's going to do it for this week. I'm Glenn. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Oops. Be soon.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.